Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back, Culture Punch Podcast. Your host, Wall Street, as always. Excited to talk to you guys today about an exciting podcast. We're kind of going to continue with the trend that we had last time in regards to politics. Not so much, but some of the people we're going to be discussing are going to be obviously in the political eye and have opinions on politics and things like that. So we're going to kind of stay with that trend, and I'm really excited to be able to have someone so I can debate that with, and we can kind of go back and forth, get some ideas. I got my cousin Monica here on the phone. How's it going, Monica?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. So I'm excited that you're on. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking a little bit about some of the political figures in regards to some of the things that have been going on. Obviously, the election just kind of happened, and I wanted to talk about that very briefly. I didn't want to spend too much time on it, but I think this is going to be a little bit important for people to understand, you know, what kind of where you stand and moving forward, what to expect from the rest of the podcast. So, first and foremost, you know, I'm not going to ask you who you voted for, but the big question seems to be that the election was rigged. Do you believe that?
I think for me to say that the election was completely rigged might be an overstatement. What I do think is that there were definitely some areas where not all votes were counted. And I think it's super important that in this democracy that we have here, one of the great things that we enjoy is that our votes count. And so do I think the entire election was rigged? Not necessarily, but do I think there were definitely areas where not all votes were counted? Absolutely.
Do you think that was like the mail-in stuff, or do you think that was something that was like early voting, or where do you think that broken link came from?
I definitely think that this all came from the mail-in ballot. And it's hard for me. I don't really want to say necessarily, because I don't know with certainty if it was intentional, but there was definitely some people that weren't doing their jobs. I mean, just in Georgia alone, they have found three batches of votes after the election because of people not doing their job properly. So it is very concerning. And they really, all of these votes that have been found after were all a result of the mail-in ballot. So yes, I do think so.
So did you see, they released this morning that the Attorney General for Georgia, they redid the count and he released the results. Did you see those results?
I have not yet, but I was reading, I briefly saw that the votes still have Biden regardless of the new ballots that were found.
Yeah, they had Biden winning, which I thought was a little odd. I don't know exactly how much the difference was from the original to what they found. I just know that he came out and was like, yo, you know, Biden still won or whatever. And you know, if that's true or not, I don't know what the process was for them actually counting those votes. But imagine if the votes came back indifferent, or they came back, you know what I'm saying, like what that would say about the rest of the states and Georgia being the first one that's you know, claiming that the results are pretty much the same. Like, what would that mean if the election was rigged? How would that, like you said, democracy, how would that affect people feeling like their vote counts?
Well, what I think is the biggest issue here, let's just assume that Biden did win. The problem here is it goes beyond that, because I think that there is a level of distrust that has been created amongst the general population when it comes to our voting system. I think 2020 was a really unique situation, obviously because of a pandemic that was unprecedented, and us having a vote in the midst of this pandemic. I just think that, I mean, at least personally, I feel like I don't know if I really trust the voting system. And to me, what's incredible is we have some of the most talented, most technological advances in the world, but yet we don't have a voting system that works. And that just baffles me. That just I don't understand why we don't. But I think beyond whether it's rigged or not, I think that the general public has lost some trust in the political system. Not that a lot of people already distrust the system, but I think finding out that, hey, there was additional votes that didn't get counted. I think it creates a lot of distrust in the system. And in order to have a democracy, people need to feel, you know, people need to have a voice. And if the very system that is supposed to give you a voice doesn't work, then we need to go back and have a conversation about what needs to be changed. And I think the next 4 years should be spent in bettering our voting system. Obviously, now we know that we can be hit with pandemics where people may not be able to go out and vote. So now I think the conversation needs to be shifted to how do we create a voting system where people have confidence, where we feel that there is 100% full transparency, because as of today, I really don't think that there was 100% transparency. And I do think if there were 3 batches found in Georgia, what other states were missing? What else did we not see? And I think that that is the general feeling amongst the U.S. population.
So do you feel that, because you mentioned the pandemic that hit 2020, where, I mean, we're still in 2020, but, you know, obviously it's very detrimental to the way that we just operate in general. And then it definitely took effect on how we vote. Now, do you think that our whole voting system needs to be reformed in general? Or do you think that because of the pandemic and then having to adjust and have the mail-in votes, do you think that that's the issue that you feel? Or do you think realistically it's just the way we vote in general needs to be changed?
No, I don't think the entire, I definitely wouldn't say that the entire system needs to be changed. I think that what just needs to happen is we're, you know, we live in a world, in an age of information where, you know, you can do most things through your phone, especially like our younger generation. I mean, kids in high school, sometimes they don't know what to do. You know, everything they do it through social media. They do it online. So I think that what needs to happen is our voting system needs to catch up to that. So I do think that there comes a new generation that will need more ways to vote. So I think what really should happen is there should be a system created where people can vote electronically, perhaps, or where people can mail in ballots, but in a way where there's trust, where we know, okay, I voted and I can actually verify that my vote was received, that my vote was counted. So I don't necessarily think there needs to be a complete reform. I think that there's a reason why voting has worked in the past. I just think that it's time to rethink the way we vote and how transparent we are, if that makes sense.
So they had an idea. Would you agree with me that they had an idea that this pandemic could possibly run all the way till November, and that there was going to be a high chance that there were going to have to be mail-in ballots? Would you agree that they knew that ahead of time?
Absolutely. In fact, I personally think that they felt that it was to their advantage. And when I say they, I mean the Democrats. I do feel that they felt that there was somewhat of an advantage in the fact that this election, there were, you know, a lot of mail-in ballots. And you know, the only reason now, do I believe that mail-in ballots are a bad thing? Not necessarily. But do I think we were not prepared as a nation to vote through mail-in ballots? Absolutely. I don't think we were. Because if we, like, if it was a standard practice to update and to ensure, like, hey, I can only mail you a mail-in ballot if I can verify that this is where you live. Yes, but I mean, you had states where people were receiving ballots that were dead. People were receiving ballots that no longer lived in at the same address. So I just think the system's got to be updated. It's got to change. It's got to do something. But it can't continue this way. And yes, absolutely. I think that it was advantageous to the Democratic Party.
Well, I agree there, because I know when they discussed the mail-in ballots, I know that the majority of what was going out, because if you remember, I don't know if you did by mail or not, but they were going to ask you what pretty much you had to choose a party, and then they were going to send you a ballot based off the party you chose. So I guess the analytics that came back were the majority of those mail-in ballots were Democrat. So I can see, absolutely. I can see why that's the part right there that strikes me as, you know, it's hard to see if indeed it was rigged or not. I made another video where I'm like, yo, if if it was bad or if it was illegal, yeah, then just say that, but do it presidential and say, we're going to investigate and move on. Don't do all this extra stuff and don't throw extra sauce on it like President Trump was doing. But I do agree that you had a lot of time to understand, yo, we might possibly have to mail this stuff. Let's get a system down. Apparently they thought their system was, we're going to ask you what you are first and then we're going to send it to you. You mentioned people being dead and address and stuff. That's where it gets a little convoluted, because how many people don't, because to save cost on a new driver's license, will keep their old address, you know what I'm saying, just because they don't want to pay that fee. So I can see that not being the faults of the states or whatever reporting the individuals, as far as the people who have died and things like that. You know, that's that. I still haven't actually seen proof of that. So until I get proof of that, I can't really speak on that, because I really don't know how true or what percentage of that was misinformation like that or whatever. But I agree that they had a lot of time to figure out how they were going to do this. They had a lot of time to really understand, okay, this is going to be the possibility. And that's the thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of it leading up to the election was, will the Democratic concede when Donald Trump wins? Will they concede? And it's like Hillary told Biden not to concede and don't do it. And they were grilling. I don't know if you remember, they were grilling Joe Biden. They're like, you better concede. And nowhere on there was there really any attention on the fact that President Trump could lose. And if he does, will he concede? And I don't know if it was his cabinet that was prepared for it or unprepared and it was like a last minute thing, but the fact that they were so surprised by how many mail-in ballots were Democrat, I feel like they would kind of have an idea of what they were going up against. And I feel like they should have been a little bit more prepared than they were. And I definitely feel like someone should have been in Trump's corner and been like, yo, don't say that. You know, like, we're trying to keep the integrity here. Let's not go into full manic and panic, especially because of the crazy radical people. I mean, there's radical people on both sides, but we know that there's some pretty radical people that follow President Trump and, you know, hang on every word he says. So I feel like you have to be a little more responsible with some accusations and things like that, and just kind of say, you know what, we believe it was false. We believe that something's not right. We're going to investigate. We're going to go through the Supreme Court. As of right now, you know, we're not going to concede, and then leave it at that, instead of, you know, every hour or whatever, tweeting. That's just how I feel. You know what I mean?
Right. And when I can even speak from my own personal experience with the whole mail-in ballot. So I bought my house 2 years ago and I never updated my voting ballot. I honestly didn't even think about it. And because I, you know, my first thought is I'm going to go to the poll and I'm going to vote. So I didn't think to, oh gosh, I need to update this, right? So I didn't do it. What happened was, an opportunity came up to be, out of town for a month. So I was going to go spend, a month. I just actually came back, from Hawaii. And so I was getting ready to leave and early, voting had just opened. And so I called because I wanted to mail in my ballot before I left because early voting had not yet opened. It was about to open, but I was going to be leaving before it actually opened in the state. And I said, oh my gosh, if I leave, how am I going to be able to vote before I leave? If I don't, whatever. Long story short, I called and I said, look, could you mail me my ballot so I can, my address is outdated, so that I can vote before I leave. I'm supposed to leave town on this date. The early voting polls don't open until, I believe it was October 16th. And I said, and look, I'm flying out on the 13th. Can you help me out? So the woman verified my information and she told me, you know, we already mailed your ballot. And I said, yes, but you have the old address. And I explained the situation and she said, look, I'm going to mail you the ballot to your new address. Do me a favor, though, if you don't get it, though, and you really need a vote, she said, look, there is one place open where you can do early voting, and it's been open all of October. And I said, oh, you know what? Then that resolves my issue. She said, I'll send it anyway. So close to the date that I had to leave, I was checking email every day, and I still had not received the ballot. So I decided that I was going to go down to the poll. I got there super early, got in line, ended up voting. And guess what? Now there was two mail-in ballots, different places. One was at my old address. Now one was at this new address, and I'd actually gone to go vote in person. So who got the ballot at the other address?
Huh.
And so there's just a lot of that, you know, and that it just does. Right now, I think that that in itself has created a lot of lack of trust.
Well, yeah,
and I think that that's how a lot of Americans feel.
So, all right, let me ask you this. Okay, so you had your issues with your early mail-in ballots. Do you think that's even a possibility where if they send your name to your old address and someone else gets it, you think it's that they would double count? Like, let's say you went in and voted in person, like you said, if you submitted that vote and then someone submitted yours, are you thinking that they're actually counting both of those, or they have a system that kind of would cancel that out, knowing that they were having to prepare for that?
Well, I think that I think it's unknown. I really can't speak for sure. So when you get to the polling station, they do ask you to sign an affidavit that you're not going to send your other, like, they're pretty much saying, hey, if you go back home, you get your ballot, don't go and fill that one out and double vote. They make you sign one saying, hey, this is the only vote I will submit.
Yeah, but that's has nothing to do with the other person.
Exactly. So that's where the lack of distrust comes. Like, yeah, I'll sign an affidavit that I'm not going to double vote, but what guarantees me that somebody else isn't going to send the ballot that was sent to an old address? So there's just a lot. I personally think we were not prepared to do as many mail-in ballots as we did this year. I think that the way, like, one of the things that Trump had said is, hey, only allow people to do mail-in ballots when they actually call and request him with their updated address. I think that was really justifiable. If you request one, get it and vote. But don't mass mail hundreds and millions of ballots to addresses you don't even know if they're updated. I mean, I'm a perfect example. I had a ballot get sent to me about a month before I called, and it was sent to an old address.
Oh, I
never got it.
I agree with that 100%. I think that if they're asked for, I think the problem, and it could just be me, but, you know, you've heard the expression cry wolf, right?
Yes.
So I feel like when they were discussing the whole mail-in ballot thing, Trump was so against it that he was just, you know, spinning out all this hoopla here and whoop-de-woo, and they were like, no, they just kept shutting everything down. So even when it came to a good idea of, hey, you should only mail them out when people are asking, people are so fed up that this boy had cried wolf so much, I don't think they listened. But that's what I was telling you before we got on, is like, I feel like I'm one of those people that can listen to somebody that I like or don't like, and I can dissect what ideas I agree with and what I disagree with. And I think that's what kind of is lacking in today's society, is the fact that, you know, we can't even really positively debate anymore. Everything's kind of like, I'm going to force you to view it my way or whatnot. But I agree with that. If someone asked for it, I think that's when you should have, you know, or added that stipulation, like, hey, you know what, you guys are doing the census stuff and you're making that a lawful thing. So people are going to the house. Why not have those people also marked down? Are you going to be voting in person, or are you looking for a mail-in ballot? That would have been a perfect time, because they literally came during the summertime and they were relentless. They wouldn't stop until they spoke to you about the, you know, who lived in the household and all that stuff. So I feel like they had a system to do it. I agree with you, though. I don't agree that they should have just sent everything out, because it would have curbed, or at least it would have pinned a problem like we're having right now in the butt. If President Trump would have came out and said, mm-hmm. look, a lot of people voted who weren't eligible, they could have easily gone back and said, no, we spoke to these people before, so anyone that comes up ineligible, you can, you know, send them a court hearing or whatever, because affidavit, whatever you said, so that way they can deal with it, because they are the ones that lied, not us. But they should have seen these things. And again, it goes back to not being properly prepared, like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. When I think the other disadvantage too, in this type of scenario, is that every state got to do whatever they wanted. Every state kind of has that ability to say, here's how we're going to vote. And we had some states that are saying, hey, you can mail in your ballot up to 10 days after the election. Like, what? Like, to me, that's just, I really think there was a lot of things that were not clear, and every state was doing something different. And so I think we have a lot to learn from this election. Do I think it was rigged? I can't for certainty say yes or no. But do I think there was a lot of things that were done incorrectly? Do I disagree with a lot of the way that we went about it? Yes. Do I think that there was some dishonesty that went on? Yes. However, do I think that all this dishonesty and shadiness that went on would have changed the result? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Before I ask you the $1 million question, I want to ask you this first. So you mentioned, obviously, like there's like a lot of shady stuff that was going on and things like that. But on President Trump's behalf, the big thing that you said is like every state was doing it differently. And I've touched on this on any kind of political subject that I've discussed on this podcast in the last couple of months. This is what I had to say about it because I completely disagree with it. I said the problem, and this will tie into like some of the Black Lives Matter stuff, but we'll get into that later. The problem is that I feel like President Trump, being an election year, you know, he would talk a lot about, you know, we don't take breaks. Presidents live 4 years or serve a 4-year term. They don't take their last year off. I agree with that 100%. So the fact that he nominated a Supreme Court judge and everyone was giving him crap about it. No, I can see that. I understand that. You're part of the presidency. You have to do it. You're still technically president. Do it. But what my thing that I disagreed with, and going back to what I was saying, is it's an election year. And I feel like we suffered more during the COVID thing, and then you add the election, because I feel like he was trying to not lose supporters and not lose voters. So instead of stepping in and being like, yo, this is my executive order, because we know he loves signing executive orders. But instead of doing that and saying, this is how we're going to do it nationwide, and this is the steps that we're going to be correcting, or we're going to be looking at, or this is the platform or the template we're laying out leading up to the to the election, he allowed the states to do it. And I said, he did that because I want to say he looked at it from a business. He's a smart guy. He said, look, if the states mess up, I can blame the states. I wipe my hands clean of this and it's the state's fault. But if the states do good, I look like a genius because I didn't overstep or, you know, use my position of power. I said, you know what? I'm going to trust you guys to do it. So then either way, he doesn't lose any voters. And in the end, he could possibly gain voters. And I think that's where we suffered. And I think that's the only fault that President Trump has to take when it comes to how he approached the election, is he should have done more to step in. And even if he had to shove these governors a little bit and say, look, no, we're going to have a standard. And if you want to kind of differentiate from the standard a little bit, you'll have a little bit of wiggle room, but you're not going to just have complete power to do whatever you want.
Right. You know, I don't know enough about electoral law, but I wonder how limited he was, though, in making those type of decisions. I mean, I realize that the president does have quite a bit of power, but I do, you know, I do know that there's still some things that he can and cannot do. So I wonder how much of that was him saying exactly what you're saying, or how much of it was him just having restraint on how much he could do.
Well, let me give you an example, okay? So if I was President Trump and I wrote an executive order and I said, this is how everything's going to be, how we're going to handle the COVID situation, or how we're going to handle this moving forward, what that does is it's going to have to go through the House and the Senate, and they probably would have revoked that executive order, but it would have been between 2 to 4 weeks. So that would have gotten the people a taste of what President Trump's plan was for 2 to 4 weeks. So now, if it was a good plan, if they revoke it, you're going to have uproar where people are going to be really upset about you removing the executive order that the president put, because quote unquote it's working, or if it's not working, at least you get that idea as well. So I don't know a lot, like you said, either, but I know that when an executive order goes in, for them to try to organize and try to vote on it and debate on it and all that stuff takes at least 2 weeks. So there would have at least been 2 weeks of that in place for us to get an idea of what his plan was. But again, I feel like he was hiding it because he didn't want to lose voters, and he was betting that he was going to win the election and then he was going to move forward. I have people that are inside the Republican Party that told me that, and I'm not, this is a quote, okay? This is verbatim. When Trump wins, he's going to sign a federal executive order that removes the power from the governors, and he's going to open up everything. So it wasn't a if or whatever, it's when he wins, these are from my Republican buddies. This is what they're saying. My Republican buddies that know what's going on. And I'm like, okay, well, first of all, you know, he's got to win the election. Right now, he's not the most popular guy. You know, I thought he was going to win, but, you know, you never know. And then here we are.
Mm-hmm. I think in everything that you said, I think the other thing that was very, I think, challenging for Trump, if Trump wasn't just going against Biden, and I know we've heard this, and I believe this with my heart, Trump has been, for the last 3 years, not just combating a specific political party. I really think that when he went up against Biden, he was truly going up against CNN, the entire social media, almost. He was going up against MSNBC. So I think no matter what he would have done, there would have been a lot of people unhappy. I think no matter what he would have done regarding the election, the media has made it their goal in the last, I want to say, 4 years to depict whatever he does. Doesn't matter. You know, there was a huge peace deal that was just signed, and there was very little talk about it. I think that the media just has decided we need Trump out of office.
Oh, for sure.
And that is what they have focused. And that is what they have focused on the entire last 3 to 4 years. And so I firmly believe that no matter what Trump would have done or not done, it would have been reported in such a twisted way. And granted, it's not that I personally admire Trump. Like, his personality can be very abrupt. A lot of people have distaste for his personality. He's very outspoken. He doesn't care about being politically correct when he addresses certain things. But I also feel bad for the guy, because I'm thinking, man, like, this guy was not just up against Biden. He was up against the entire, like, social media. He was up against MSNBC. He was up against CNN. He was, ABC. I mean, you name it. I have never seen so much negative propaganda against the president. At least not that I can remember. So I don't know. That's kind of just my
No, opinion. I agree with you. I think so too. Here's the problem though, is I feel like some of that was caused by his own accord. So it's things that he was saying against these networks, or things that he was doing to kind of, because he would have interviews where he wouldn't even have some of these networks allowed in the building. So I think it's things like that he was doing like that, that caused them to mm-hmm. be even more, you know, liberal or more against him and things like that. But 100% I agree that there's an agenda out there from the get-go, and they were going to try to change it. And I think that comes because he's done a lot for, like, the Christian faith. And like you mentioned, the peace deal. And I think you're talking about the peace deal that Jared Kushner did in Sudan. Is that the one you're talking about?
It's one that was done in the Middle East recently.
That's the Sudan. Yeah, the Sudan one. Yeah, that was Jared Kushner's deal. And I think that it doesn't get coverage because, again, that falls more on the religious side. So right now, Western world, we know that.
So, but here's my problem with that. Whether it's wrong or right, it's happening. My problem with that is that at what point did media, who's supposed to inform the general public, become like an outlet where I inform you of my opinion? You know, the way I see that, the role of media is to inform me of the facts. It is up to me how I interpret those facts based on my background, based on my beliefs, based on my background, based on the way I was raised.
And simple facts.
It is not media. Media, it is not your job to tell me how I should interpret this.
And the media
in the last few years has spoken, like, not only do I want to, they don't even report facts anymore. They report opinions. And if I have facts, but they don't agree with the way I feel about the subject, I'm going to go find other facts. Where's the transparency? And you know what's really sad is that some people don't see beyond that, especially not the younger generation. They get fed. All they do is turn on the TV and believe everything that's out there. And really, the role of the media in this country, and in fact, I think the role of the media, period. You know how doctors have to sign the, what is it? The oath? The Socrates, what is it called? The oath that the doctors have to sign?
Oh, that they will uphold and they won't take advantage of their
pretty much, yeah. Like, what is it called? The I forgot. I can't think of it right now.
I don't know. That's your area of expertise.
Yeah, like in other words, you're going to treat, like you're going to always put the well-being of your patient beyond anything, right? That's going to be your first priority. I almost feel like that needs to come back into media, right? I think reporting facts versus feelings needs to come back. Like, let the people interpret that information however they want.
No, 100%, I agree.
Like media, I think that, like, honestly, I am extremely disgusted with most of the media, period. Because I think that we've gone from, let me report the facts and you make whatever you want of those facts, to I am going to report opinions 100% of the time, to pretty much uphold the narrative that I want to present to you.
That's why I don't like the battles that the news networks have, but I agree that they try to push opinions and they try to make you feel guilty for not viewing those opinions the way they lay them out. So like if you think different from what they say, they almost ridicule you for it because they're sitting here bashing President Trump.
They demonize you.
Yeah, exactly. Because like I mentioned, you don't have to follow Trump or believe Trump on everything he does 100%. But if it seems like if you like him on one thing or follow him on one thing, oh, you know, what's up with your boy Trump? You know, like they have that kind of, and all of a sudden that's who you are. You're a Trump supporter and you're a conservative.
You're a bigot. Mm-hmm, you're a bigot. You are a racist. You are. Yes. And they demonize you for yeah. I have a problem with the culture in the last 2 years for exactly that very thing.
Yeah. And I couldn't tell you when exactly that change happened from news where they just kind of tell you how you should feel and give opinion. Like, I couldn't tell you. I don't know, because I was, you know, obviously when you're a child, you have that innocence to you still. So I don't know if I was watching that and they were still reporting facts at that time, or they're reporting just news. And then, like you said, letting me, you know, take the information however I want to take it and move forward with it. Or if they were always doing this, but as I've gotten older, I've started to notice. I don't know which one it is, or right, where that happened, that shift happened. But, you know, you mentioned them pushing their agenda forward and doing all that. It brings me to my next discussion that I wanted to ask you about. So a lot of people know that recently Harry Styles was on the cover of Vogue magazine for wearing a dress. And it seemed like they were trying to, based off of his comments, they were trying to... I don't know if they were trying to say there was nothing wrong with men wearing dresses, or they were trying to, demasculate the, you know, men by doing it. But Candace Owens took to Twitter and she actually released a video kind of discussing some of the things that she felt about it. Now, I'm not the biggest Candace Owens fan. I don't agree with a lot of reviews, but again, I can sit neutral and listen to what she has to say and agree with this and then disagree with that. And again, I think that's the problem, is whenever she comes on and speaks, I don't think people are really taking in all the information. But one of the things she said, I'm going to kind of break it down as it goes through, and I want you to give me your thoughts. So one of the first things that she says that kind of stood out to me was, she said, bring back manly men. Manly men are good for our society. Do you feel that there needs to be like a yin and a yang, like a balance between a woman and a man in a household, where you have like a woman being feminine and a man being masculine?
I think, so my problem is not, okay, if you're a man and you want to be more feminine, that's your deal. That like, everybody should be allowed to express themselves however they want. Here is where I have an issue. Do I think manly men are good for society? And the short answer that I have to say is yes. The reason why is historically. And what does a manly man even mean? I think that's where we need to start, right? And yeah. I think what do we even mean when we say manly, right? And I think a lot of
let me ask you this: you're a female. If I say a manly man, like, what do you automatically think when I say a manly man?
I automatically think of a protector.
Okay.
Somebody who's able to defend. Somebody who is maybe assertive, not to say women aren't. I'm just saying, like, men just tend to be more assertive. This has been studied in psychology. I think of a protector. And so when I think of some of the greatest civilizations, and so this is where I think they said it, they're good for civilization, is if you think of some of the greatest, the strongest cultures that there have ever been, regardless of your opinion about them, thinking of Rome, right? Like, how did Rome rise to prominence? How did they expand the way they did? How did they become one of the largest civilizations in their time? It was exactly because of that. You had men that protected their borders. And so I do think, like, I mean, when you think of who went and fought World War II, when you think about who went and fought Vietnam War, I mean, whether you agree or disagree with it, that's outside of fact. It is these men that we talk about, like, you know, maybe aggressive protectors. And so I think there's a lot to be said about a man who's a protector. I just think that, again, I think going back to this demonizing things, right? Are all things of everything that defines or that people have socially constructed to define masculinity, are they all good? Not necessarily. I mean, I come from a culture like, you know, I was, my family's Mexican, well, our family. And I mean, some of the machismo, some of the stuff isn't good, but there are other things that are good. And so what I don't like is that it's like, it's all or nothing. And I feel like that's almost the way with everything, right? It's like, you either are like, if I say I want a manly man, now suddenly it's like, you want all the toxic part too. No, yes, of course, I want a man to be the protector of my home. And why should I be ashamed of that? So do I think manly men are good for civilization? Absolutely. Do I think macho men who put women down are good for society? Absolutely not. And so I think that there needs to be a really clear distinction on what are manly men, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, well, that's where people see, that's the misconception, is like you said, people, I agree with you when you said that a manly man is like a protector, a defender, you know, a lot of people say a provider, which, you know, in today's day and age, that's not obviously what makes a manly man. I'm just saying that this is some of the things that I've heard people describe a manly man being, but like, people think automatically, oh, when you have someone who's assertive, when you have someone who's protective, who you have someone that is just a man like that, they automatically assume that, oh, but if you want that, you're going to have to understand, you're going to get someone who might strike you at some point, or who's going to, you know, demonize you, or who's going to, you know, make you feel less of a whatever. And that's not necessarily true. I don't think those qualities go hand in hand with a manly man. I think some guys, it's just like anywhere else. I think you have the guys that view things what a lot of people would call quote unquote traditional, and they just can't get past the fact that, you know, we're in a different generation, we're in a different, we're in a more progressive society, and a lot of people just want to continue to hold women back, which I don't agree with, right? That you should do that. But a lot of misconception comes with, if you're going to get that stuff that you want in a manly man, then you're going to also have to deal with all this other stuff. And I just think that that's a bunch of bull. You know what I'm saying?
Right. When I think the other thing, so the whole thing with Harry Styles, but I don't even know the guy. I have nothing against him. Here's where I have a problem. So if you're a man and you want to wear dresses, I really do think that one of the great things of living in this country is that you can literally do whatever you want, as long as you're obviously not physically damaging anybody else or, you know, breaking the law. And so if you want to dress like that, by all means, right? I'm not going to say anything against it. Be free to be whoever you want. And that's one of the great privileges in living in a country like the U.S. Where I have some issues. And I think that the whole article that was presented in Vogue, it wasn't about, oh, hey, look, you can express yourself however you want. I think it went beyond that. It was really an attempt. I really think it was a political attempt to redefine what does being masculine mean. And I think more than that, I think there's sometimes subtleties, right? And I think one of the things that it also aims to do, it aims to shame or attempts to shame men who want to be your traditional masculine. You know, when was the last time that you heard someone being praised for being the provider and the protector of their home? You don't really hear that. So it's like, let's praise the opposite. But if you're, you know, defining yourself as being manly and being the protector of your home and the provider, when was the last time in the, I would say, mainstream media, when was the last time that we heard that being praised? And so my problem isn't that somebody wants to go do that. My problem is that suddenly, if I don't see that as progressive, if I don't see that as this grandiose thing, and I don't applaud you for doing it, I'm somehow against you. And I'm just a bigot. And I'm a racist. And I, that all that's got to stop. If I don't agree with you, we can agree to disagree. And I think you had touched on it earlier. Like, we can't even sit down and have a conversation anymore. Right. And I think there comes a point where we can agree to disagree. One of my problems specifically with mainstream media and this woke movement is that I don't only have to agree to disagree, now I have to agree with you. Because if I don't agree with you, then I disagree with you, which is definitely not true. And I think that ideology has been pushed into this society for the last, probably for the last 10 years, but it's gotten progressively more evident.
Well, not just that, but if it's not just if you don't agree, we're going to agree to disagree. If you don't agree, oh, guess what? I, for some reason, have this overwhelming feeling that I have to make you understand, make you see my side, make you see my point. I have to force it down your throat. And that's, I think, what's being taught is like, oh, if they don't agree, like you said, they're bigot, they're racist, they're this and that. So I'm going to view you this way. So I'm going to try, you're my friend. I'm going to try to change your way of thinking. And I'm going to try to, you know, bring you to the light or whatever. And a lot of people have that mentality. And that's not the right mentality to have. But you mentioned normal. Another thing that she said that the left hates anything remotely normal and can't stand anything functionally normal. Like you mentioned earlier, we got to define what normal is. And I don't believe mm-hmm. that having like the traits or what was technically, not technically, obviously, because they're going to say different in the dictionary, but what's defined of a man that we've, as a society, have understood, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And I agree with you. The Vogue magazine, I feel, was more of an attempt to like change your mind and saying, hey, look, real men wear dresses or real men wear skirts or whatever. And it's like, yo, like if you want to do that, that's cool on you. But, you know, you're not going to tell me how I should think
don't
and how
undermine.
I should feel.
Yes.
And if
don't
I
undermine men that don't want to do that.
Exactly. And this is what I think is so hypocritical, right? And it's so funny. I'm going to bring up two examples, right? And you can agree with me or not. But I think it's so funny with feminists sometimes because they're like, you know, oh, you know, a provider, well, women can do the same thing and whoop-de-woo this and whoop-de-woo that. No one's saying that. And a lot of times women will get a lot of slack for being what a lot of people would call traditional or old school way of thinking where a man is working and a woman isn't. And my example is, if you watch any of those housewife shows, Alyssa watches a couple of them, and if you watch any of those housewife shows, there are plenty of women on there that do not work. Or if they do, they attempt mm-hmm. to do these things as an entrepreneur and then they fail. So at the end of the day, they always mm-hmm. have the backing of the income that's being brought on by the man. Now, feminists praise these women, mm-hmm. right? Because they're on TV, they're doing this, they're allowing their lives yeah. and stuff. But it's like, if you're going to live traditional by the words of a feminist, then you have to, why won't you attack the women that aren't doing it on their own? Why are you praising that? And then the other thing is,
right.
I've seen the women within the show be like, yo, you need to work. Like, you can't let him control your life and you can't let him be the sole income because if anything happens, you need to have your own money. And they're not even having any right. kind of marital issues. But it's like, women are putting this right. in people's heads. And they're praising him for that instead of, you know,
yeah.
looking at it. And then the second example I have is from a comedian by the name of Bill Burr. He does this a little bit on a stand-up, but I think it's so true. They're saying like when a man goes in at presidency and you have the first lady, that the first lady, you know, feels the right or has the right and the need to make decisions with the president on certain things. And obviously not, you know, a lot of when it comes to higher end things, but they make decisions as a team and what their views are. And, you know, she needs to be involved as much as possible and things like that. I don't agree. I don't disagree with that. Here's where Bill Burr comes in. And I thought it was hilarious is he says, whenever the first woman gets elected president, you're going to see the feminists go completely back on what they're saying, because when you have the first man or the first lady, whatever you want to call them, when you have the first gentleman in office, the moment that he tries to open his mouth and have an opinion about something, they're going to be like, you shut the fuck up. Like, it's her turn. It's, you leave her alone. She deserves this. And it's like,
you've been telling me for years. You know what? It's very one-sided. It's very one-sided. And one of the things that, one of the issues that I have with even the term feminism, look, do I agree women should have equal rights, equal pay, equal this? Equal, absolutely. Absolutely. Do I think we are wonderful creatures, beautiful women made by God, right? Do I believe that we have contributed just as much to society and that we're imperative to this? Absolutely. Do I feel like we should empower each other? Absolutely. Here's my problem with feminism is that it, like, not only do we need to have equal rights, but we want to take it just another step further. Now we don't want you men, right? And like, what's this need? Like, how much do you need to prove? Like, you know, like, we prove that, hey, women are amazing. Well, and women should have equal rights, and women this and women that, right? But it's like, I feel like feminism, especially like the radical feminism, right, has to really just take it overboard and don't have children. Just focus on your career. Why can't I be like, why can't I have children and have a badass career? Why can't I have both? Why? Because suddenly, like, I'm conforming. Why can't I be happily traditionally married and still have a great career? Right. So I feel like it's sometimes in this society, or maybe it's a human nature, right? We have to always be so extreme. We're on extreme opposites constantly. Now, do I think that when the feminist movement started, there was, you know, obviously there were at the time a lot of need to fight for, you know, equal rights in many areas. And I still think there is that today. But the problem that I have with feminism is, you know, now feminism looks down on a woman who wants to stay home and be a mother. Why? Right? Like, why? Like, if I want to be a housewife and raise my children, why is it that it's looked down upon? I think
that's where the inconsistency comes, because if you exactly, no matter what decision exactly. you make, you're going to be looked bad upon. If you make the decision to stay at home, it's like, oh, you should be able to work and do that, blah blah blah. But then if you make the decision to work after you have your kids, it's like, you know, a mother is there to nurture. She should really be a part of the baby's life, you know. So you get it from both sides. It's not like a win-win situation. So inconsistent.
I kind of disagree a little bit. I do think that it happens to be more on the other end.
I'm not saying that. Like, I agree with you. Yes, you know, they you see it more on the side of if you stay home, then they look down upon you. But I feel like there's those instances where you go back to work and you still get judged. So that's where I'm saying it's like a lose-lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
I agree. No, I agree with you. And I think the example, the thing that you said about the comedian where, you know, if you had a female president and you had the first gentleman, again, I don't know what you would call it. And if he tried, you know, taking that role of the first lady, they might think, oh, he's trying to overrule. Or he's trying to. Yeah. So it's just, you know, I agree with you. I completely agree. And I just. You can't have your cake and eat it too.
I agree with that 100%. Now, the other thing she said is that obviously they're shoving it down our throats and men and women dresses are beautiful, whatever. Would you find a man in a wedding dress attractive?
Absolutely. Absolutely not.
So there's no chance of your future husband wearing a dress for your wedding, then, I'm guessing.
Nope.
Culture, cancel her. You hear what she said? Cancel her.
If somebody wants to wear a dress, it is up to them. My man is not wearing a dress because he ain't getting to be my man.
But that's a thing. Like you said, you should be able to make that choice and not have people judge you. And just because you make the choice doesn't mean that you're on the side of you want to wear a dress.
You can have your choice.
Do whatever you want. Yeah. But I'm not doing that. And don't judge me for doing it.
Don't judge me for not wanting that.
Yeah.
Like the next thing, Alex, is that somebody tells me, well, why don't you find that man attractive in a dress? What's wrong with you?
It's coming.
It's coming. You must be a bigot. Oh, you're hateful.
It's Versace. Like, no, how do you not find a man in Versace attractive? It's like,
yeah,
what?
Yeah, like how?
I don't
why?
Care.
Why? What's wrong with you?
Could
What's
be
wrong
from
with
Ross.
You?
I don't
What's
care.
Wrong with you? Exactly. Like, and that, And that right there, that very thing that I just said, it's just like, that's what I disagree with this culture that says this is what's progressive. And if you're not on board, then you're against me and you're not progressive and there's a problem with you. No, like, let me have my own taste in men, right? And don't tell me what I should find attractive. Don't tell me. And, you know, so yeah, I completely agree with you.
And I agree. I think you need the yin and the yang. Like, do you think that a society can even survive without like that balance, without having like strong men? Because like you mentioned, you look at humanity and civilization as a whole, like everyone that's like, I'm going to give a couple examples because I wanted to touch on it earlier. Like one of the big ones, you mentioned like the rise of Rome. The rise of Rome, obviously there were Roman soldiers and there were warriors and there were this and there were that. They were powerful. But then came the downfall of Rome. And a lot of people don't talk about what happened. A lot of what was going on when Rome fell is you had a lot of homosexual acts that were going on. You had a lot of just what's the word? We have a bunch of wives and stuff like that. Like they were doing all that, and there was a lot of things that were going up against. I guess at the time would have been Catholic, but even
I
goes
think
against
people
Catholic.
Got comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're doing things that were going against initially what you were built on. You were built on, you know, a one God and the beliefs of what then even was the Bible still. And when they went away from that, it was like almost taken away. And we have a lot of examples in history where everything seemed to be going good. And then the minute they started kind of going away from God, that stuff would start like kind of going downhill. And there's always going to be a great nation and there's always going to be a fall of that great nation. Now, right now we currently sit as the great nation. So what is the downfall? Are we going to implode? Yeah. Are we going to implode though? Because I think we do need, you know, like strong men in order to survive. You mentioned it. If there's a war or something, who are you going to go after? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're
not going to
go after.
I'm not going to call the guy in dresses. I'm sorry.
But it's
true. If I'm going to draft the man, I'm probably not going to draft the guy in a dress. Like, now, are both of them capable? Possibly. But if I really, like, if I was in a situation, like life or death situation, and I needed to be protected, am I going to pick the guy with the gun or the guy in a dress? I'm sorry. Like, I'm not going to call the guy in a dress.
That's what I'm saying. I need someone that's going to be able to sprint, not that's going to trip over their dress. You know what I'm saying? Someone's going to wear pants.
Right.
Like someone that's just, jeez.
Now, do I care that guy wants to stay home and be in a dress? No, but like, I hope that there's still enough men that are not in a dress so that I can call in and we can still survive.
Well, there's so much conversation and conspiracy out there that they're trying to do like a one world currency and that they're trying to eliminate gender and eliminating gender is like all part of the goal and stuff. And I mean, if that's the case, like
absolutely,
there's plenty of examples of like, for example, if that's a true conspiracy, trying to make men in dresses masculine is a good way to blur the line between what separates a man and a woman. That's like a start. I'm not saying that would be the main thing, but that's obviously a start. And it's reasons and things like that. I feel like that these conspiracies exist is because you're showing a lot of the people what you kind of want to do. Because Candace Owens also says that if you were to see a guy in a dress in the street, you would think he's a crackhead. You would think that he has mental issues. And it's true. You'd be like, damn, he's having a bad day. But it's true though. If you saw that, you'd be like, "Yo, man, this dude is for real on another level."
But now
like,
we're trying to normalize that behavior. We want to normalize that behavior, and I don't know. There's just a part of me that just doesn't sit right with it.
I know, and she also says that she believes Hollywood is a conduit for bad ideas. Do you believe that Hollywood obviously pushes like bad idea propaganda for people to kind of catch on trends?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think one of the things in Hollywood, and I mean, look at any fashion magazine. Just think of a fashion magazine. Every time, I laugh at this because every time you see like fashion show, think of a fashion show. They come out with the most ridiculous outfit.
Oh yeah.
Right? Like you think no one would ever freaking wear that out in the street. And if they did, we would think they're weird.
You would think they're poor.
You'd be like, what happened to that person?
And
right?
They put everything they could find together and they just put it on. They sewed it and put it on.
Yes. And I think about what my mom would actually say. But but you know, honestly, I think that they take the most different, most obscure things and say, look how cool and amazing this is. And I think it's almost like a trend to be different, right? It's a trend and we want to be different and we want to express ourselves and we want, I think what for me, to be honest, for me, I think one of the biggest, I do think, honestly, I think the U.S. is in a downfall. I really do believe that for many reasons, but that I don't want to go into today. But I think that we live in a society where there's this thing where I can be whatever I want. You can be whatever you want. You can express. So I think there's this, all this culture, especially in Hollywood, that the more different you are, the cooler you are. And then you have all these followers, all these puppets, all these, and I think it's the majority. I think it's the younger generation, this generation that like upholds Hollywood is like, wow, like they think, you know, and so here's my problem with that. So I'm going to just bring up Hollywood, and I think I can bring up Hollywood whenever I think of Hollywood and I think of how much negative influence Hollywood has in our younger generation. I think of Cardi B. I cannot not think of Cardi B. And I think of her song WAP, right? And I think like,
what does that stand for again?
Oh my God. I'm not even going to say it. Right. But I think about that song. And you know, what's really sad to me is, okay, you want to teach women, right, to be empowered, to be different, to like be, to pretty much be empowered, right? Well, instead of saying, hey, you can be empowered by all these positive things, instead of like, hey, be empowered by your WAP that you can give to anyone at any time you want and just like out there. Why is it that a woman has to be empowered by this? Why is it that it's not like, hey, young woman, go be a doctor. Hey, young woman, be an entrepreneur, start your own business. And so there's a lot of toxicity in Hollywood. And unfortunately, we're in a generation where Hollywood is raising our kids, unfortunately. And I think that has a lot to do with everybody has so much access to information. It's the information age, right? So ideas, trends.
But yet people are so much more stupid now. Sorry to interrupt you. I just had to say that. Gosh.
Yes, yes, yes.
So do you remember a calculator? That was all the information we had. It was a freaking calculator back in the day. And we utilized, like, you remember the graph calculators? We can do so much with those things. I bet you kids don't even know what a graph calculator is.
Yeah, no. You would just, hey, Google, what's this, right?
Yeah.
And so I think, and unfortunately, I wish that Hollywood really did have more women that would say, hey, be empowered by this, right? Be empowered by being an entrepreneur, be empowered by like, you know, I don't know, like be empowered by things that actually enhance society. But then you have Cardi B and all these followers. I mean, how many followers does she have on social media?
I have no idea. I'm sure she probably breaks records.
Stupid amount. Yes. Stupid amount, right?
Exactly. Stupid,
and
yeah.
Her way of empowering or telling women, especially young women, to be empowered is by your WAP, right? And then you have, I have to mention this, then you have the president or the future president, Biden, who actually who goes and interviews Cardi B. And I'm thinking, okay, so not only are these women being told to be empowered by their WAP, by this singer, but now the future president or the candidate to the president-elect is interviewing her. Yeah. Is interviewing her because of what? Because of she's so famous because of her WAP song?
That's what I don't get. These presidents need to stop talking with rappers, man. Like they like President Trump was with Lil Wayne. It's like rappers aren't powerful people. Stop it. You know, just stop. Stop talking to rappers.
You know what? I think everybody stick to their own roles. Like I feel very strong about, because here's the problem with that. I feel that they do have a lot of influence, unfortunately. So I think about how many people might have gone to the polls and said, oh, well, Cardi B, my idol, endorsed Biden, so I'm going to vote for him. And I think about,
are the people that shouldn't be allowed to vote because they're stupid. They don't know what they're voting for.
But here's the problem with that. That's the majority of our generation. That is literally like we've become, I feel that this younger generation has become numb. There's information overload. And so I sit down, I see a small clip and I just get fed. And that's even goes back to the same problem that I have with media. Media is no longer giving facts. Media is telling you how to think. And that is not the purpose of media, or at least the news, right? The news should be informing you of facts. And you should have some reasoning and some critical thinking skills to say, what do I think about that? But no, like, I feel like there's a generation where we're just puppets. We're puppets of whatever's being said to us. And even in our phones, right? Like, how many times have you said, you know, even been talking, this is kind of creepy, and said, oh, I want to buy a grill. And suddenly you see a grill. Like, we are fed information so much that. And probably so much more than what we realize. And so, I agree. Like, I just went off on a tangent.
No, it's true, though. We don't talk about the things that they give us. It's like, we know Snowden, you know, told us all, yo, they're spying on you. And we don't care. At first, it was like, oh, me? And then now it's like, oh, TikTok spies on me. The Chinese spy on me through TikTok. But I can't give up TikTok. You know, it's like they hide it in the apps that everyone wants to use the most. And they record everything. I hate that. And we don't question it. We don't do anything about it. Like, Zuckerberg and the owner of Twitter were just on with the Senate. And it was nothing. Not a lot of coverage on it. And nothing happened. We're in the same exact place. Nothing changed.
Exactly. I saw that. I actually saw that clip. And I was like, thank God. I forgot what his name was. He actually said, hey. Because they're talking about, hey, Twitter, Facebook and Google, what you guys are all sharing information. Mm-hmm. Somebody made a joke. I'm sure they're not sharing information about what are you having for dinner, right?
Yeah.
And so really, like, there's a lot more that happens, and I think some of these companies like need to be held accountable. One of the things that I'm extremely appalled by is all the censoring that's going on.
Oh, I don't agree with that at all.
I'm sorry, social media. Your job is not to censor whoever you don't like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, okay, you want to put a platform out there where people can just say whatever they want. Well, you, unless you're physically hurting someone, you cannot say, hey, I don't like your opinion on this. So I'm going to be censoring you. God, because can you imagine, like, this is what I'm talking about. Like, they're fed information, right? So not only are you already fed information by the media, right? Now, even the social media platforms will censor certain things. And to be honest, they're not really censoring liberal ideology. They're usually censoring conservative ideology. Mm. And I have a problem with that. You cannot have freedom of speech, and you cannot have a country where there is freedom when you are very tactfully only disseminating certain information. You cannot. And in fact, I've been to Cuba twice. And one of the things that I remember the last time I went, you guys know, Cuba is a communist country. And one of the things that I was just like mortified by, okay, was I went there, and especially in the second time, I noticed, like, I was actually paying attention to the news. I said, I want to see this. And you have no idea how skewed the news was. It was very targeted. The way that the news was presented to the people in the country was, hey, we're just going to tell you what we want you to know in the way that we want you to know it. And if we don't stop these social platforms, that's exactly what's going to happen here too. That's exactly what's going to happen.
I agree. I never agreed with censorship. I don't know if you've heard of a guy by the name of Alex Jones, but a couple years back, they removed him off of all platforms and they censored him. And that was like the beginning of it. Now, I cannot wrap my mind around the fact that President Trump got censored so much on Twitter and all that because he mentioned voter fraud. They didn't even release those. They caught it before it even went live.
Mm-mm.
And they censored Mm-mm. him. But yet you see videos that get out of people performing murders and it goes live for people to see, and then they cut it out. It's like, how does that make it through? But this one doesn't. Yes. And like you mentioned, it has to do with targeting of people. In the Senate hearing that they had with Mark Zuckerberg and the guy from Twitter, they said the exact same thing. One of the senators said, I got censored for When I was running this year, I had mentioned, I gave a shout out to the military for voting and our veterans, and you guys censored me. Meanwhile, my opponent tweeted something similar, and yet his went through. I have, and he's a Republican, he said, I have the, I believe, and I have the opinion to believe that you guys were targeting just what I was saying, instead of it being equal. And if you're going to put in keywords and let's say voter fraud or in this case, veteran and military, if I'm going to put that in a message and you're going to censor me, anyone, whether it's average Joe to the president, if they are going to say anything with those keywords, you have to censor them too. And that's not what's going on.
I think there is a true danger in media censoring. I really do. And I think, you know, going back to the point that people need to be able to make their own decisions. People need to be able to see whatever the heck they want and make their own mind. Like, because to me, when you're censoring, and they're like, well, we're fact checking. When you're censoring, to me, what that tells me is I'm stupid and I can't fact check for myself, or I'm stupid and I can't make up my own decision. So you're going to kind of make it for me by censoring the information that I get to see.
But also, I want to know what this person has to say. If they're going to say something, no, don't censor them. I want to know what they have to say. Like you said, let me make that decision. If they want to call out voter fraud, let it say voter fraud, and then we'll go based off of that, because this is all just evidence in a court of law or whatever that you're suppressing. And you're also suppressing that from public opinion. And in a time like an election, everyone is entitled to have their own opinions, just like everyone's entitled to vote. That's an American citizen. So if they have that right, they should be afforded the same right of an opinion based off someone, what someone has to say. And now you're censoring that person. I didn't agree with that. And I don't hate Donald Trump, right? I don't agree with a lot of the things he does. And I know he goes on Twitter rants sometimes, and I'm just like, man, I wish he needs to have someone in his corner that like kind of censors the things he says, as far as like what he should and shouldn't say, or like he should really think about what he's going to say before he types it out, you know. But I don't agree with them making that decision for him. Like, if he wants to send it, that's got to be one of those things like, yo, if I were to send a dick pic somewhere, there ain't no way I'm getting that freaking thing back. Nothing's going to stop me from that picture going out. It's gone. It's done. I made the decision. Yeah. It's gone. Let it be. It's got to be the same thing with what the president has to tweet.
Yeah. Like I think to me that is one of the biggest dangers that there is in today, 2020. One of the biggest dangers to democracy, to true democracy in this country, is some of the censorship that's going on. It's scary. It is scary.
It is, because you hear about, like, you're very religious like I am. Like, you hear about things like, we're not going to understand things in the last days, and you know, they're going to be attacking Christians or whatever. And they're just kind of building a report.
Coming.
Yeah, they're just building a report against you, right? Now, imagine they use your censored tweets. Like, let's just take Twitter, for example. If I'm tweeting something about religious and they keep a resume on the things that I'm saying, they're going to automatically know, you know, hey, when things hit the fan, you know, this person's Christian. This is where you can find him. There he is. And it's like, that's what they're doing with all this public information.
Let me tell you, they're not even going to say this person's Christian. You know what they're going to say? This person's a bigot. This person's hateful. This person, because what they've done, what the culture has gradually created, and what they're doing is you're no longer Christian, or you're no longer traditional. You are a bigot. Like, they started changing, right? So if I were to say, hey, this person is just very traditional in their, or very conservative in their way of thinking, and if I said that person is a bigot, obviously there's a huge difference. You may still be saying the same thing, but there's a huge difference, right? Because now, if I call you a bigot, now I'm justified to do something to you. So it's coming.
Think of a stereotype, right? When you think of a Mexican or a black dude, and you automatically think, oh, they like watermelon, or they like taking siesta or something. So there's a stereotype, and you say the word like hard worker, and people think, oh, Mexican, watermelon, black dude. It's almost the same thing. You say conservative, and you're like, oh, there's racist, bigot. You know, it's like, that's already here.
Right.
And it's crazy to think that. It's like, whoa. And then you can automatically assume, if someone says, you know what, I support gay marriage, they're like, oh yeah, he's a liberal. And it's like, you can have a view on something and then not even be that whole thing.
Or you could even say, here's another example. Or you could say, look, I don't agree with abortion. Or I don't agree with full-term abortion. Suddenly, it's not that you don't agree with it. Suddenly, it's because you don't agree that women should have freedom.
They tack that on, exactly. Yep, they tack that on.
Yeah, so I think that there's been a very subtle movement for a very long time to switch these up. And an easy example, a really easy example that I can use is like criminalizing immigrants, right? So when you want to criminalize an immigrant, what do? You don't call them an undocumented immigrant. What you call them is illegal. Because if you use the word illegal, suddenly there is an attachment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you create the narrative in that sense. And now it's like, I can create a story based off of this where the media kind of forgets because I've attached this to it. So they're immigrant. They're doing this. They're doing that. And it's like, oh, like when Donald Trump, when he ran the first time and he called all the Mexicans that are coming over, he called them rapists and murderers, all this and that. Literally that like caught on. Now people that were coming over the border, like you hear Carl Tuckerson and people like that saying, oh yeah, you just got a bunch of rapists and murderers. It's like, no, man, like it's not the case. Some people are actually trying to seek asylum and things like that. But now that that's been attached to it, that's what the outlook is. And that's not right.
You add a label.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And like you said, and
suddenly anybody that belongs to that group is that person.
Yep. Like you said, the end is coming because I mean, and this is a big sign. This is how I know regardless, if you want to be blind and you want to keep your blinders on to everything else, this should tell you people the fact that the Pope has endorsed gay marriage and is going to make that a normal thing. Now you gotta understand for people who are like, oh yeah, but you should have the right to choose. I agree. If you want to do that, that's fine. That's your decision. What I'm saying is that the Pope and the Vatican, they're there to uphold one law. That's God's law. And there's no like wiggle room in there for gay marriage. So a lot of you know this and don't act shocked by it, you know, for people who are hearing it. So the fact that the Pope is going on and saying, oh, you know, I think it should be allowed, is not progressive. There's something else behind that is going on that now he's coming out and he's going to start to shift the minds of some of the people who truly do follow the Catholic faith to believe that this is okay. Again, I'm not saying it's not okay in the sense of you shouldn't do it and this and that, but if that's what you want to do, that's your choice. I make my own decisions. I make my bay. I'll lay in it at the end of the day. Same thing with you. If you believe in gay marriage, if you love somebody, then be with that person. But you got to understand that there are people that have told you based on, you know, like the Bible, let's say, that some things are wrong. If you choose to believe that or not, whatever, that's your decision. Mm-hmm. You're not a bad person if you're a homosexual, not a bad person, even if you murder, like a lot, you know, you could have change of heart. Things can happen. So the fact that the Pope is endorsing that now based on just biblical law, you know that something big's around the corner.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm not surprised. And just really speaking more from my religious and my God-fearing side, I think that, you know, everything that's happening is, it's coming. You know, there's going to be a prosecution of the church. What once was morality is being lost completely, right? When everything is left to subjectivity, you know, what is right? Like, what is right? Like, if you can't define what is right and what is wrong, eventually everything is okay. Everything goes. Mm-hmm. Everything goes.
Yep. If you don't have no moral compass, what's to stop us from doing something?
Exactly. Everything.
Yeah. Everything just blurs. The lines are blurred. And then it goes to what all those conspiracies says, where they want like a one world order, like a one language thing. And this Babylon, if you guys didn't know, the Tower of Babel, that's what they wanted. They had one language. And there's a reason God had everyone having different languages. Like, this is all in there. You do a little Google search and you'll find a lot of these answers. But, you know, a lot of people, you know, don't want to know the truth, or they know the truth and just don't want to be it, because right now it's going to affect their lives. And a lot of that has to do with what the media is pushing out, because the media makes it quote unquote uncool, or you'll get demonized for your beliefs. So it's better you just go with the flow than be the guy that, like I said on one of my podcasts, when did following become the new normal? We were always taught to lead. Always lead. When we were growing up, you need to be a leader. Lead. Don't follow. Lead. Now, if you lead, you're in the wrong. You must always follow what's going on. It's just, I don't know where that change happened, but I don't agree with that.
Me neither. I really don't. And I think, and again, I think going back to even some of the, like, here's where I stand with all of that, right? Like, if I let's just say that biblically speaking, I don't view gay marriage as being okay with God, okay? But if I tell you, hey, well, I don't think it's morally correct in the eyes of God, but look, like, if you want to be married and you, that's the lifestyle you want to lead, like, I have no business telling you what to do, right? But then don't come back and tell me that I either have to embrace it or I'm against you. I'm not against you. I have made a decision to live a certain way. And I'm not saying that this is my view. I'm just saying, like, I objectively see, like, you can't, it's like I either got to embrace what you're doing or I'm against you. And I think that there's, again, a lot of danger in doing that also. Like, if I don't agree with what you're saying, then I must be against you.
Work in fairness. And that is not. Work in fairness. If I'm going to respect your decision, because I will not judge you. You're an amazing person. So what? You're homosexual. Oh, so what? You're married to a guy. So what? You're married to a girl. I love you or whatever. Yeah, you're a good person. But don't judge me because I don't, agreeing with it in the sense, like, I'm never going to tell you you're wrong for it, right? But you know where I stand. And don't try to change my mind on it and then make me out to be the bad guy because I don't think the way you do. I agree. That's a very dangerous thing to do. And that's not fair. I want the same fairness. I agree 100%. And that, I think a lot of that has to do with like the whole Hollywood thing. I was going to go into like a couple of other things, but we'll say that for another podcast because this one ran a little bit longer than I expected. But you see that stuff all the time. Hollywood always pushes that agenda and they're always pushing the things. And one thing I do want to touch on this podcast before we get out of here is my opinion on why I think Harry Styles was wearing a dress on the cover of Vogue magazine. I do believe... I'll tell you, no, this is what I do. I wanted to bring this up because I've heard so much about Hollywood and from like, this is a fact, like you can look this stuff up, right? But there's that Hollywood likes to like poke rappers in the butt and that's the reason for them tatting up their whole entire bodies because they're ashamed of the acts that happen towards them. So they try to kind of cover up what they do. You hear about the pedophile rings that there's like proof and evidence that things like this exist. But people kind of turn a blind eye to it. And I truly believe that some of these things that we see is a cry for help or like a glimpse of like how the inner circle views some of these people, Harry Styles in particular. Like eventually, I feel like you would probably start viewing yourself like that. Like Harry Styles in a dress could mean that that he's been passed around and treated like, you know, like a finishing table. And like now he views himself like that and he's just expressing on the outside how he feels on the inside. Maybe he's been treated because he was a young star and you hear a bunch of rumors about pedophiles in Hollywood and how a lot of these young stars have to go through the initiation or whatever you want to call it. And they do a lot of things. And a prime example is the whole Justin Bieber video, the Yummy or Yum song. It's all about him at a buffet or he's eating food and there's a bunch of these old guys and the whole theme of it, he's in pink. Is that they're lusting over him because of the things he did as he was a child. And I think that someone like Harry Styles has probably hit the point of elitist to where, I'm a conspiracy theorist, you gotta understand, where I think that he's hit the point of elitist, where I think that they've kind of passed him around and he's just giving us a view of what he feels like on the inside. And he's just kind of following orders. That's what they're telling him to do. Sad. But I think this happens. Yeah.
That for me might be a little bit.
That was a lot. I know.
Like maybe.
I know.
Yeah, maybe know. A little. Like I wouldn't necessarily.
I went in deep extent, on that one. Yeah.
But what I will say is that I really do think that sometimes people in Hollywood aren't necessarily the ones pushing out the ideas. They're pretty much saying, "Hey, this is what I'm being told. Exactly what you said. This is what I'm being told to do. So I'm going to do it." Right. So,
that's why I mentioned elitist. That's why I mentioned elitist because it's not like it's the elitist behind the doors that control the people that are the face of Hollywood.
Yes, I very much so. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it was like, look, we need this, and I don't know what happens behind the scenes, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're like, hey, we need a male who could do this and who's very like followed and somebody who would be perfect for this. Like, I don't even think that. Harry Styles was like, look, I really like dresses. And so I'm going to approach Vogue. You know, I'm sure that Vogue was like, or somebody told Vogue like, hey, this is what we want to do because this is what we want. right? There's someone pushing agendas everywhere, right?
Well, it started, they picked them. I think they handpicked them because like 2 or 3 years ago, they had whoever's hot at the time. They had Jaden Smith wearing dresses for Versace, right? And he was like, this is cool. This is that. And I think Jaden Smith was the it thing at the time. Now, I think it didn't catch, which is weird, right? Because I think a lot of what we see in the culture as far as trend setting has to do with like what's in the black community, right? So here you have a black dude that's dressing in a dress. And for some reason, it didn't catch. So they're like, okay, we're going to attempt it again. We're going to let a little time pass. Yeah. And then now it's like, who's hot? Oh, Harry Styles is hot. Let's put a white guy in a dress and see if that catches. I'm serious. That's how I feel. I feel like they tried the black card and then now they're trying the white British card. And they're like, okay, let's see which teen idol or let's see which heartthrob people side with. The guy that's wearing skirts Versace made or the guy that's wearing ball gowns that are whatever, you know, whatever brand that is. But it's like, I think that that's what they're doing. And you're going to see diversity. You're going to start seeing different cultures doing this stuff. Watch. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. No, I really do think that it doesn't really happen of, hey, I woke up today and I like dresses, so I just want to go on the cover, right? I really do think, again, and I think it's very strategic and political. I don't think Vogue just said, hey, we just want to... Yeah. Now, I do think that in general, magazines like controversy, drama, because that, you know, that's what sells. But I do think, like, to an extent, I mean, I don't agree with everything you said. It's a little out there, but I wouldn't be surprised, if, you know, if it's this agenda that's being pushed and this is one way of doing it. But you'll see that being masculinity is going to be attacked from different angles. It already has. This is just one way.
Oh, I agree. And then it's what's going to be attacked even more is the people who disagree with that movement. Is like you said, you're going to be called something. You're going to be categorized. You're going to be put in a group, and that group is going to be demonized, and that group is going to be scrutinized, and there's going to be a hashtag, and there's probably going to be some kind of cancel culture against it. That's the reality of where we are right now.
Yeah, and I really hope, like, one of the things, I guess, that, you know, in everything we're saying, one of my final thoughts is, you know, I hope that we can, as a nation, get to the point where we can agree to disagree without having this cancel culture. Oh, well, you said this, and we don't agree with you, so we're gonna call your employer and make sure you lose your job, or we're going to, you know, make you lose everything. Like, I think that needs to stop, you know, because I think what it's doing is, and I think this is the intention, of course, I think what it's doing is making people stay quiet. And you cannot, and again, I think I'm going back to having a true democracy. And in order to have a true democracy, you have to have freedom of speech. You have to have people willing to speak. But if you feel that your survival, your even your financial well-being, your ability to provide for your family is going to be at stake because you give your opinion, you are going to have no incentive to speak, right? And so you can't, like, and I think going back to all this, I love the fact that this country is the way it is. And I think I have never felt more proud to be American than when I landed back at the airport from Cuba. I loved Cuba. I had many beautiful things, beautiful people, good food, beautiful beaches. I loved my time there, but I have never been more proud to live in a country like the U.S. where I feel no fear of speaking my mind, of being who I am, of having that freedom, than when I landed back. When I came back from Cuba. And so I literally felt, there was this meme, I think it was a meme or a GIF or whatever you call it, where there's this guy that's like holding a flag, and like, it's kind of funny, right? But I almost like felt that way. Like, oh my God, I've never felt so patriotic. And there was this overwhelming joy of like, gosh, I live in a country where I don't have to fear, right? Like, there was fear, like people had fear of speaking their minds. And I experienced this firsthand. No one can tell me, well, that doesn't happen. I literally experienced having conversations and people would say, we can't talk about that. Mm. And I don't ever want us to get to that place ever.
Yeah, I think we've come a long way, and hopefully we don't get to that place. But I get it, man. I always like ending a podcast on a positive note. So here's my positive note, and you can add to it if you want to. I think that as crazy as 2020 has been with the holidays coming up, you know, obviously we still have to be responsible, but I cannot say this enough. I think that things are only going to get worse. And I think that we should really cherish and enjoy those little moments in life, whether they're with your kids or with some type of your family, whether it's your parents, whether it's your siblings, something. But I really think that we need to get back to where we're morally grounded, and kind of get back to our roots. Even as adults, I think we need to kind of, you know, head back home a little bit, because we don't know how bad things are going to get. We don't know how long it'll be before we see our loved ones. So I think we just need to really understand that we're in a crazy time, and we're all kind of in this together, and just remind each other of the love that we have, and just kind of move forward with positivity, and just kind of keep an open mind with things. I don't know if you want to add to that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And the other thing too, I think it's also the time to be thankful. There's been so much negativity and attack on, you know, on America, and you've heard this narrative of America's the worst. And I think for me, at least, like this Thanksgiving more than ever before, you know, I think I feel grateful to be in this country. Like, I have access to healthcare, with COVID going on. I have had, you know, I know a lot of friends that have had access to unemployment. I have friends that have had access to public assistance because of COVID. And you know, I have family still in Mexico, and that's not the case there. People will go hungry. And so I think to tag off of what you said, yes, like family is so important. Go and enjoy the time that you have. But also, I think for me, this Thanksgiving is time to just be thankful for being in this country, for being privileged to be born into one of the best, most prosperous countries that there ever was and has been.
I agree with that 100%. For anyone out there that's listening, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Culture Punch Podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at @Culture_Punch. As always, we're on Apple Music, we're on Spotify, we're on iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts. We are everywhere. All you have to do is just search The Culture Punch Podcast. We will come up. Look for the question mark. Monica, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate your opinions and sharing those with me and the audience. I hope to have you on again so we can finish this discussion, since I know that there's probably a lot more that we want to get into. But for now, I think we've done pretty good.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, of course. Anyone, if you guys have any questions, as always, you can always reach out to us. If you guys have any opinions, we're always welcome to those. So go ahead and just reach out to us, and I'll get back to everyone. So thank you again for following the podcast, listening, whether you're a day one or you're new. Thank you, thank you, and thank you, and thank you to my guest. Thank you, Monica.